Hey everyone, this is Klaatu. Welcome to the GNU World Order. This is Season 11, Episode 18. We're coming up pretty quickly here on the end of the year, so I guess in 2018 I'll switch over to Season 12. I don't know, usually I do 20 episodes and call that a season, and then I take a break, and that just hasn't been really happening lately. So I think what we'll do is switch to Season 12 for 2018, and I don't know, maybe when we hit, like, 2021, which seems arbitrary enough, I'll just start naming the seasons after the year. Anyway, for right now, episode 18, want to talk about a couple of things. First, listener email. This is fresh listener email, you'll notice. All of these actually refer, well, not all of them, one of these refers to the just last episode. One email was from Andreas in Switzerland. So what he was saying, Andreas, was that he had gotten into IT work and was currently, from what I understand, he's kind of segueing over into the engineering side of things, the actual development side of things, working on web technology. And specifically, he's working on a case study with, I don't know how to say this, Django, however you say that, you know, the Python web framework, instead of PHP. Python is just one of the nicest languages to write and read code in. And I sympathize with this, and I also have actually really enjoyed, like, on the flip side of this, I've actually really enjoyed my time with PHP. I didn't do a whole lot with it, but I got to work with a little bit at my previous job. It was really kind of fun. It was nice. I did not mind PHP, but then again, I was doing everything in a big single file. There weren't a whole lot of includes required. It was pretty straightforward PHP. So yeah, I don't know how good of a feel I got for it, but Python I've also used, obviously, but I mean, also for web. And I think I even did a Hacker Public Radio episode about Flask, which is the web framework that I had ended up using at the job, just because that's what IT already had installed and available for its users. So that's what I used. And it was quite nice. It was really helpful, actually, in understanding how, I guess, what we call web apps are built. That was quite fun, and this kind of echoes back to the previous email that I got from Doug, which I'm assuming I read on air. Doug was saying that he finds that the web browser is sort of the easy, obvious, really, universal GUI platform when you're programming something that you want to have working on several platforms. And while I acknowledge that, I also feel a little bit hesitant to jump on board that train, and so that's kind of why I don't go down that path all that often, I think, is because I don't love the idea of defaulting to the web browser. And I don't know, maybe it's just something I'll have to come around to eventually, or maybe something will happen and I'll turn out to have been right all along. Who knows, with the loss of net neutrality, maybe people will start defaulting to local data instead because they won't want to spend money on their expensive networking plans or something. The only time can tell. Next one I got was from a guy named Nathan, who I actually know in real life, or knew in real life, and he was saying that he'd sort of, I guess apparently I introduced him to Slackware, which was kind of cool. I mean, I knew that I'd introduced him to Slackware, but I didn't realize it was going to make a huge impact, and he was just kind of saying hi to me to say he's still using Slackware, like, in real life, and actually got a job as a software engineer. And he uses Linux every day. That was a really cool email to get, because here I am just kind of doing what I do, and in real life I made an impression on someone. I didn't even know I'd made an impression on this person, and in fact, truth be told, that person had made an impression on me. I thought he was a really cool guy and really creative, because he had done a short film, and it was a really cool short film. It was this stop-motion animated film, and it was just so creative and so cool, and I kind of always kind of wondered, I wonder what he's up to and what kind of stuff he's doing. And luckily, he got out of film. And I say luckily because the film world is a horrible place. And he went into the much more sane and exciting world of software engineering. And apparently, I had some small part in making that possible, which was pretty darned cool. That's the kind of thing that you just makes you feel really good about the way things are going. Finally, Tim emailed me, and Tim says that since I was talking about Sun Microsystems in my previous podcast, it made him think of a guy named Brian Cantrell. And Brian Cantrell is a name that I think I've heard, but I might be getting it confused with David Cantrell, who is an early Slackware guy and now works at Red Hat. So I'm not sure which, you know, if I've actually heard of Brian Cantrell. Either way, Brian Cantrell is, from what I gather, an employee at Joyent Technologies. And Joyent is the company, I think I briefly mentioned in the previous episode, that is taking a lot of the Open Solaris stuff, and I think that they had an Open Solaris / Ubuntu system that they had maintained for a while called Nixenta. He's working at Joyent, or I think so. Either way, he was at a Joyent engineering meetup in 2017. I know this because there's a YouTube video with him talking, giving a little lightning talk. It's an amazing talk. You should definitely listen. And that's what Tim is saying, is that this guy apparently does a lot of really good talks, and he does them quite quickly, actually. He's kind of sort of excitable kind of guy. But that's good. That's usually kind of contagious. So he gave this talk on GNU plot on the wrong OS, but still, it's an informative talk. It's a very basic thing, but if you've never used GNU plot, it just kind of, it breaks down that barrier of like, I've heard of GNU plot, I just don't know what it's, I mean, I'm assuming it's for plotting things on a graph, but I don't know the first thing, where to start. And he shows you that. He gets you up and running in about 5 minutes. It's a 5-minute and 21-second talk, and after that, you will be able to do at least one stupid trick with GNU plot, so it's worth watching. And I'll try to remember to link to that in the show notes. That's it for listener email, so let's get on to the topic at hand. The topic this time, this week, a little bit different, actually, because it's actually related to a current event. Specifically about Patreon. So Patreon, if you don't know what that is, it's a crowdfunding platform where you can sign up and subscribe to various artists or creators, as they call them, because they might not be artists, they could be developers or anything. And there are a couple of different schemes. You can sign up to give money to someone whenever they release something, like a releasable item, whether it's an album or a software library, you know, something that they kind of point to and say, okay, this is done, so now I'm going to get paid for it. Then the money gets withdrawn from your account, and they get your money. Or you can do things where it's more like every month. Whether they create or not, you'll be giving them money every month, or whatever. Various schemes, and it was a pretty good platform. And as I recall, and I could be wrong, but if I recall correctly, when it came about, it was kind of it was the only one of its kind. Now, there was Flattr, Flattr, I remember, and I don't know if I'm just misremembering or if it's changed or what, but as I recall, back when I signed up for Flattr back in, 2010 or something, it was more of a manual tip jar type of thing, where you would go and you would finance your account, your Flattr account. So you'd have money sitting in your Flattr account, and whenever you saw a Flattr button on a website that you liked or a project that you liked, then you would click the little Flattr button, and it would tip them some amount from your Flattr account, and you had to keep feeding money into your Flattr account. Now, I wasn't quite as well employed at that time as I am now, I mean, comparatively, so I'm not sure, maybe I just didn't want to commit to something that might take money on a regular basis, or maybe it just really wasn't as easy, but it was a little bit more complex. Like, you had to go in and shovel money into your Flattr account so that you could then click the Flattr button on various websites. So it was a little bit more complex, whereas Patreon, you just kind of marry it to your bank account, and you subscribe to your creators, and then Patreon withdraws a monthly fee from your account, and you can set how much, so you won't get charged like $1 million. You can say, okay, my threshold for a month, no matter what, is $25, or, $10, or $5, whatever, and they will withdraw that money and distribute the money to the people that you have chosen to support. Now, recently, Patreon, I mean, and I'm talking about like last week, Patreon decided to change the structure of how they did that. And rather than taking the money from your account once a month and redistributing your wealth to others, they decided that they were going to now take money out of your account for each subscription, for each creator that you've subscribed to, and apply additional charges to each of those to each of those withdrawals. So if you subscribed previously, if you just subscribed to 10 creators, let's say, for $1 each, then each month in your bank statement you would see that $10 had been taken out. Now, since I'm out of the United States of America, I have bank transfer or bank fees and currency conversion fees and all kinds of silly things like that. So I would see the Patreon charge and then the small rippling down of additional charges, but that was a known factor and that was kind of what I knew to expect each month. Now, under the new Patreon scheme, rather than seeing one chunk of money taken out each month, I would see, if I was subscribed to 10 people for $1 each, I would see 10 charges on my bank statement with the 10 or 11 or 12 associated, cumulatively, associated minor fees like currency conversion and things like that. So for each thing. Now, a lot of that is percentage, and it doesn't actually matter if it happens once or if it happens 10 times, but Patreon was additionally charging a 35-cent fee, I believe it was, for each subscription, flat rate, no matter what it was. So if you'd subscribed to a person for a dollar, you were essentially subscribing to them for $1.35, and that would change your total charge in the end to at least $13.50, at the very least, if not more, because of bank fees or currency conversion or whatever. And that started to add up when I was... I stopped using Patreon before it charged me, but when I was running the numbers, that was going to add up quite a bit. And not probably theoretically, not prohibitively, but it was enough to make me kind of rethink whether it was worth that amount of overhead. I want to give money to people, But if I've got this huge overhead of money that I just have to throw away into the wind every time I give them money, then it stops becoming as fun. And Patreon did that, and it was a big upset. You may have heard about it already on other podcasts. If you listen to podcasts, and I listen to a couple that are funded largely by Patreon, you'll probably have heard something about this already. I know that I have. And... so, I mean, that's actually how I heard about all this. I'm not funded by Patreon, as you may or may not know, but I've heard about it because of other people, and that's kind of how I knew to look. Now, sadly, because of all of this, I canceled all of my subscriptions to Patreon people, and I closed my Patreon account. Now, you might be thinking, well, you acted a little bit quickly there, because Patreon has suddenly reversed their decision. They've gone back on it all and said, no, we're not going to do that anymore, sorry. Really apologize, we messed up. But we're still going to have to fix this problem, so we're putting a pin in it, and we'll come back to it later. And that is what they've said. Now, a lot of people are kind of ignoring that little clause in their apology, but that's just so people understand. This isn't over, it's just that Patreon is not going to implement the initial fix, quote-unquote, that they had initially. Now, none of all of this matters, because... truth be told, I don't care how Patreon runs its business. What I'm really interested in here is how Patreon... I mean, I knew when I... even as I signed up for Patreon, I knew that I was not signing up for a free software service. You know, I knew that I had... that it was a website external of my control. It was not AGPL. It was... I had no access to what it was offering. It was just kind of the only thing to sign up for that would do the thing that I wanted, which was send money to people. Which you'd think would be easier in the modern age, by the way, but I'll set that aside for now. I mean, the financial side of transferring money, that's kind of out of most of our hands, right? And someone, I was complaining about this online the other day, and someone kind of made a comment about, well, you know, there's cash, and that works pretty well, and that's why I like it. And it's so true. you don't really, at least I don't really think about it. It's the money isn't something that I really obsess over anyway, so that the barrier of transferring money is kind of one of those things that I just don't like to think too hard about. If a bank offers me some easy way of getting money from here to there, then I will take that. And if a website offers me an easy way to get money from here to there, I tend to take that. You use it because it's a financial service, and we don't really have any direct control over the financial transference of finances. Bitcoin obviously was seeking to change that, and that's a whole other topic too, I think, which I will not get into. In terms of getting money that people can pay rent with, we tend to not have a whole lot of control over that, aside from just bundling cash up in an envelope and mailing it to someone. And even then, they'll have to go to a bank to transfer the currency because I don't have American money anymore. So Patreon was the answer to all of this, and Patreon has now broken an unspoken promise, and that's the important thing right there, is that the promise with Patreon and several other businesses that we deal with, and most of the government that we deal with, the promises are either unspoken or they're just on a piece of paper that happens to have been signed by some people. And a lot of us in this day and age, for whatever reason, we seem to believe that these agreements, sometimes unspoken agreements, I think social contract in quotes is the term that I hear bandied about a lot in our kind of startup tech culture. It's a social contract. What contract? There is no contract. And even if there is a contract, what does it actually matter? A contract doesn't mean anything if people do the opposite of what the contract says. And that's it. That's what a contract is, right? It's something that you said one time. Or it's something that you've implied at one point. And whether or not that actually matters when the transaction is actually supposed to take place is a completely different issue. And I think that this Patreon kerfuffle is the thing that is hopefully demonstrating that to a lot of people. And I think it's an important counterpoint to the open source promise. So open source, how does that differ from all of this? Well, it differs and it doesn't differ, yeah? So open source also has I guess we could call it a social contract if we wanted to. I did air quotes around that. I'm not actually calling it a social contract because I don't like that term. But open source has a promise that it has made to people, and that is that its source code would be available. That's all open source promises, yeah? Free software, of course, has a couple of other actually written down promises and almost actual requirements of what something can call itself. You know, if it's saying that it's free software, it needs to support these four freedoms. And that's great, but it's still just a contract. And people could always go back on all of those things. And people can go back on their promises in closed-source software as well. So in that sense, there's really absolutely no difference between closed-source and open-source or free software, because it's all just a collection of promises that we make. You know, we put our hand on some arbitrary book, we put our right hand up in the sky, and we make a promise, and that's all it is. But with open source, and this is something that hopefully Patreon, this Patreon thing maybe is teaching people, or it may at least encourage people to look into it, is that when you have open source, you've got your promise on the one hand, and then on the other hand, you have the very real and tangible, except it's not tangible, but, well, if you print it out, it would be tangible. You have this tangible delivery of the source code. You have everything that you need to take your ball and go home. If you don't like what the people are doing, you can leave, but you're not leaving empty-handed. Whereas with closed source software, you can leave, but you are leaving empty-handed. So with closed source software, your recourse is to bang on the floor, stomp your feet, shout really loud, threaten to leave, and then you kind of linger around to see if anyone's gonna do what you want them to do. And then there's that awkward moment where no one does what you want them to do, and you're kind of all worn out, so I guess you're going to leave. And so you either have to leave, or you have to stay after all. And I think with Patreon, this is demonstrated, right? Because they've done this thing, people stomped and shouted, and they have changed. So they've kind of gotten a lot of people to stay on this pretense of, okay, never mind, we're not going to do what we just threatened to do. Even though there is this lingering, sort of swept under the carpet promise that, well, we're still going to have to figure out who's going to pay these extra fees, but let's just not talk about it right now. Whereas something, a free alternative like LiberaPay.com, which is a service very much like Patreon, based in France, and it is AGPL software, so you can download the source code and you could run your own instance if you wanted. Would you have the deals that you need with a financial institution to process all these transactions? I don't know how all of that works. Point being, you've got at least as much as you left with in hand when you depart. And the whole transaction is a different kind of... It's a different thing, too, because now, rather than it being you against them and it's a confrontation, with open source, it doesn't necessarily have to be a confrontation. It can be a mutual agreement that we no longer really match up all that well. So I'm going to take what we all had together. I'm going to take a copy of it, and I'm going to go away now. And maybe you take 50 people with you. Maybe you take 2 people with you. Maybe you go alone. It doesn't really matter. It's all basically the same result. The same code exists. A community may have been fractured, but possibly a new community is going to be born. And they can co-mingle. They can coexist. It doesn't matter. There's no loss, really. And that's a huge difference. And I think, if nothing else, the Patreon confusion demonstrates in a very real way how much harder it is to leave something when things go bad than it is to never get involved with that thing in the first place. And I've seen this so many times, and it's so hard to communicate to people. Because there never seems to be a real world representation of what that would be, of what it would mean to people for software to change suddenly out from under you. You know, you keep telling people, don't use this Office program because it's closed source and you never know what might happen. And then something happens, and they just kind of keep using the old one until it dies, and then finally they get pushed over into the new one, so then they adopt it, and they, you know, it's all sort of very, it's kind of being blown along with the wind, right? It's just, there's no agency there. You just keep sort of getting bulldozed into the same mess, and you just keep adapting. And so you tell people, hey, look, it could be different. You could be using open source and you'd have choice. You could do the things that you want. You could look at several different options and choose the best for yourself. It would be really nice. But it's just too much work. And Patreon, for at least a week, I feel, demonstrated to the world just what closed source software actually does to people. It takes their livelihood and it owns it. It holds it in its grasp, and at any moment it can completely mess it up. And it did. Make no mistake about that. A lot of people have probably stayed with Patreon at this point because they redacted. But a lot of people have left. And that's a big deal to people who've been who based a business on this platform. Do you really want to base your business on something that you don't control? I keep asking people that, and I ask people that, and I ask people that, and they say, yep, we're fine with this. This is a shining example of why you should not do that. So, alternatives. LiberaPay.com, check it out. Tell people on Patreon to look at LiberaPay. It was an easier sell this week. A lot of people, I feel, opened accounts at LiberaPay.com. Will it last? People are probably going to split their bets, you know, have a Patreon account, have a LiberaPay account, have a PayPal account. It's silly. It really is kind of silly. But the LiberaPay account is not a bad option. You should check it out. You should look at it. You should promote it if you know people who are on Patreon. And use this, the dark week of December 2017. When Patreon betrayed all of its users on both ends of the spectrum, payers and the payees, as a great example of why closed source software, just don't get involved with it. That's it for today. I will talk to you next week. Thank you for listening to the GNU World Order Ogcast. This has been Klaatu. You can reach me on IRC. I'm on the Freenode network usually in channels such as Ogcast Planet, Slacker Media, Slackware, couple of others. My nick on IRC is not Klaatu. You can also reach me lately on Mastodon. My username there is @klaatu@mastodon.xyz. Of course, you can email me at klaatu@member.fsf.org. That's klaatu@member.fsf, as in Free Software Foundation.org. And of course, you can visit my various websites, GNUWorldOrder.info and SlackerMedia.info. I will see you next time.
Yeah, everything's fine.